Wait till they get a load of me. Evil dies tonight, ladies and gentlemen, right here on Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans, unless, of course, there's a sequel already contracted for. It's Halloween! Halloween 2021, in case you don't already know. And here I am, Stephen Van Patten. I guess I'm looking a little pale, so excuse me. It's been a rough week. I am joined by none other than the original Black Gandalf, Kirk Johnson, and the Hufflepuff himself, Mark Gavin. We got wands, we got pipes, and we have makeup. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in, spending a little bit of your Halloween cheer with us before the rest of the world fucks this up with Thanksgiving and Christmas. I'm so glad that you're all here. And since we've all gathered here together to talk on Halloween, we're actually going to end up talking about Halloween, the movie franchise, that is. Basically, as much as we can muster up about 11 movies, some classic, some ridiculously horrible, and then, of course, the recent ones, which are, you know, fairly what you would expect from the franchise, especially with good old Blumhouse in the mix. But before
that, Busta Rhymes?
No, he couldn't make it tonight. So before we get into all of that, though, we had some interesting chatter before we hit record. And Mark went shoe shopping and things didn't quite go out the way he wanted. So we're going to hand the floor to him while he tells you this spooky tale of shoe acquisition gone wrong.
So, So Vans, I wear Vans. I like my Vans. And apparently this Halloween, they put on horror themed sneakers. And they had It, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, and The Shining. And
shut up and take my money.
Yes. Yeah. All day, every day. So I went into the store and unfortunately they were sold out of all of them except the one I did want, which was The Shining. Now, if you've not seen this shoe, go to Vans, look it up. It's a gorgeous shoe, yellow and black. It's got the face from the original poster. Red ROM is written on the side of the sole of the shoe. On the back is the room number, and inside the shoe is the design of the carpet. Man, I'm telling you, that was a shoe to be had. And of course, just on cue, when I asked them, do they have a 10.5? They went in the back and they only had a 10, and they had 11.5. I can rock an 11, but I can't do 11.5. It'd have been like putting on clown shoes. It's not going to fit. And the 10s, I knew as soon as I put them on, they fit. But that was the case of if you walk around in them too long, they're going to start hurting your feet. So they have slip-ons. So I asked for the slip-ons. They only have them in size 12. So I leave and my wife said, well, wait a minute. Did you ask them, can they order the shoe? So I go back and they said, yes, we can. And they went online and they brought up the shoe and they go to my size and it is out of stock.
Jesus Christ.
Out of stock in like from like 9 up. Like all and the thing is, you know, they apologize and everything. And I say, I don't blame the guys in the store. They retail, they're just selling what's sent to them. But what gets me is that I really hate when these places know that these companies know they're putting out a product. And I mean, it's all capitalism. We know what it is. But Those sizes are the average shoe size of men. Right. I don't know too many brothers walking around with a size 8 foot or size 7. Really right. don't. Mm. So
I know a couple of dwarfs or hobbits that probably do that, actually.
I would like to meet a hobbit with a size 7 foot.
Wait, don't hobbits have ginormous feet?
No, yeah. But they're also hairy. And you can probably find one or two of them that are smaller of the sizes.
Yeah.
You can't. And the problem is dwarves.
Well, not
them
not
beasts, the one, them feet's big.
Not them the feet. Hobbits okay. in the not the hobbits in the Proudfoot family. Excuse me. Proud feet.
Yeah.
So I was really disappointed with that. And they said, you know, we'll come back after the Halloween holiday. We should be getting a new shipment in. And I'm thinking, yeah, no. Because something tells me these were holiday-inspired shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just have to wait till next year when they come out with a new type of whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
maybe I might get lucky. You never know. I might, over the holiday, over the Thanksgiving holiday, I might find a store that's got, like, you know, one of them backwater stores that nobody buys the shoes from and be like, yeah, we got those.
Right. And,
I might score them, but you never know. We'll see.
You never know.
Fingers crossed.
Kirk, would that be something you're interested in? Horror sneakers?
I don't know. I don't think so, to be honest with you. I mean, I think they're awesome. I'd definitely buy them for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But for myself, you know, the way I go through sneakers, and you know, no, they won't survive.
Right.
They won't survive. So no, but I saw them when you posted them, the picture on mm-hmm. man, I knew already. I was like, I knew two cats is gonna dig this.
At least,
shit. At least, if anything, just buy the pair. You keep a size. And Steve keeps the size and call it, and that's it.
All in a day.
Yeah.
Because yeah, those are like shoes that you wouldn't, those are not shoes you'd wear everywhere.
Right.
Those are
wear them, period. I mean,
that's like, true too. If you're, if you're a sneakerphile, you probably wouldn't wear them at all. You'd tuck them away someplace and, you know, pull them out just to admire them every once in a blue moon, and then you put them back in the box. You know, it's like what's his name's grandfather in The Lost Boys when they got in the car and he turns the car over and he goes, "I thought we were going to town." Yeah, well, this is about as close to town as I want to get.
I can't imagine having those sneakers or anything along those lines. I mean, and to be honest with you, the Shining wouldn't necessarily be my first choice, but I could see myself on a whim kind of getting that, or if they had dare I say if they ever had like a Salem's Lot sneaker
or
some old craziness like that, I could see myself wearing them. I could see somebody like spilling something on them, and then I'm the one chasing them around with an axe trying to get at them like Jack Nicholson got Scatman Crothers.
Screaming red rum down the street.
Or, you know, motherfucker. I think, you know, that's a little more my speed. But that's an interesting thing. If my boy OSD Paper Chaser, he's out there, you might want to
Paper Chaser
look into that. Yeah, because he's like a mad sneakerphile dude, like he has podcasts and stuff like that. And, you know, and when Mark started talking about that, I was like, yeah, he would pick them up, but then you'd never see them. He'd be one of those.
Yeah,
guys.
Right.
Uh-huh. He would buy them. They'd just be in a shelf somewhere, probably with a Polaroid on the box, like an ex of mine used to do. But she had so many, she had like hundreds of pairs of shoes. And she just took up a whole wall. Right. Of just like boxes and you know, and with so many of them, she needed a Polaroid stapled to the front of each box so she'd know which fucking pair of shoes was there.
Rebecca, goblins fuck with my stash. Give me a minute.
Nice. I mean, I'm not bitter. But anyway, So Kirk is having some sort of difficulty. Because it is Halloween and it's the time of gremlins, ghouls, ghosts, goblins, and
gobbledygook. Let me ask you something.
What's up?
How was your Halloween? How does SVP celebrate his Halloween?
To be honest, I actually worked this morning on a football show. Big ups to CBS and that other pregame show, which is the thing I do on Sundays now. And of course, after that, then most of my day after that was spent getting this lovely makeup job done. So
that's makeup. Out.
Yeah, actually
pretty good.
I did not do this myself. My lovely friends at Betsy Elisa, they took care of me. They are actually a premier makeup outfit. They, when they're not busy making me look frightening, they do all sorts of celebrity stuff and movies and things like that. But they're available for private events as well, if you got the scratch. Visit them at BetsyElisa.com. Now, thanks for the setup there, Mark, to get that taken care of. Because we do like to shout people out when they take care of us. Let's talk about this latest Halloween movie. Halloween Kills. Now, it's getting mixed reviews, to say the least. But I mean, I always have mixed feelings about mixed reviews because I feel like some people, they go into a movie like, okay, so first of all, first Halloween came out in 1978. If you went to this, 11th sequel, 11th reiteration, 11th retelling of this horrible guy running around in a slightly disfigured William Shatner mask, stabbing up folks, and then not just stabbing up folks, there's also the element of creating a sort of a plateau, if you will, with the bodies. Like he has as opposed to Jason and Freddy, who's more like a serial killer dream invasion comedian guy. Michael is in his own way, he's kind of an artist, and he also makes good use of, like, if you just happen to have a mask nearby when he's killing you, like he'll create these sort of I want to say
troubled artist.
Yes, well, troubled artist, yes indeed, as are we all. But just the fact that he creates these little like menageries or something, it's like you have to admit there's something a little clever and different and nice way to sort of differentiate himself from Mr. Voorhees and all these other stabby guys out there. Not quite the strategist that Jigsaw is per se, or and certainly not the I want to say speed and hand-eye coordination of Ghostface, not to be Ghostface killer, but definitely, like, as far as serial killers go, as far as invincible serial killers go, definitely, just and in the words of Daffy Duck, it's professionalism that I respect. But in the case of making 11 movies, there have, of course, been some pitfalls, some misdirects, some not so flashes, some not so great moments, of course. But of course, since we're talking about something that started in 1978, Jesus, yeah. God in heaven. I want to say the first one is like quintessential slasher film. Mm-hmm. I literally, for me, I can't say for everybody, but for me, I have to watch it at least once in October. You know, and big up to John Carpenter for this, because he didn't even spend a whole lot of money on this.
Oh,
I think. Mm.
And he composed the music too, right? The music was his.
And he composes music to his thing. So it's just like, I'm telling you, John Carpenter, and I know I have gushed over him in the past, you know, because between The Thing, Christine, you know, and several other things where he's thrown himself into the music side of it as well as directing the film. Because normally I'm like, George Lucas is a bad motherfucker, but you know, he hands the music off to John Williams, you know, over and over and over again. You know, Christopher Nolan, he calls up Hans Zimmer, you know, John Carpenter takes care of his own music himself and does it well, at least well enough that it's effective within the movie. And it's, you know, it does what it's supposed to do. It builds suspense. I mean, there's a certain Miami Vice feel to some of it, because a lot of it's very
synthesizer.
You know, but enjoyable nonetheless. So the first two, I love them to death. Season of the Witch, we'll get into that a little bit. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw it, remember it. It's a long fucking time ago.
I like Season of the Witch.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Very
different,
off the wall, sort of like, and very steeped in this sort of like Celtic kind of.
Yeah. It felt like that. It was like the X-Files almost without Skuller and Mulder.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like a noir.
It felt like it was being Blumhouse before there was Blumhouse. You know, without.
I mean the interesting thing about Halloween 3 is the fact that it wasn't part of the Michael Myers
story
franchise. He never meant it to be, and I kind of, there's a part of me that wishes John Carpenter would go back and do what he said he was going to do now. Which was create, because apparently the Michael Myers stories was supposed to be one in a bunch of different stories that take place on Halloween, with the theme was Halloween. There was never supposed to be a Halloween 2, but because the film did so well, you know, it's a money grab. Let's get that sequel in there, know. And I mean, you know, how it ends, you know, we can move on to newer things. And I kind of wish he hadn't let the disappointing numbers of Halloween 3 deter him from doing a Halloween franchise where every Halloween we got a different type of movie. Because that would have really, really been interesting to see what would have happened if he had decided to keep with that that idea.
Sure.
You know.
Halloween, I mean, the anthology.
Yeah. I mean, I could literally, I mean, you and I, Kirk, had our conversation about Ghost of Mars, but why couldn't it be Halloween 5, Ghost of Mars? And just a completely different story line that takes place on Halloween on Mars. Yeah. You know?
Well, if you think about it, now that you mentioned it, Mark, every John Carpenter movie could be part of the Halloween idea that he was going for in the first place, couldn't it?
That's true. It can be.
Oh, not really. Oh, I take it back. No, because he had, his idea was specifically that he had different stories, different horror stories taking place on Halloween.
On Halloween, yeah.
That's why it was called Halloween. Mm-hmm. So you'd have like almost like a Twilight Zone type situation where, you know, these stories happen every Halloween, someplace within the universe of John Carpenter's world, which would have been interesting, like you said, if, you know, you find out that The Thing happened on Halloween night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the Ghosts of Mars was taking place actually on Halloween in the distant future.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Quick that, enough rewrites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mouth of Madness. The guy gets his assignment on Halloween.
Yeah.
That that would have been if only, you know, if only there was that one producer with enough money and clout to see his vision through. Right? Because really comes down to money.
Yeah, that's what
right. Yeah. The studio's I'm figuring it's stored the studios are like, we ain't gonna give you money for that that Halloween 3 you just did. Mm-hmm. We're not giving you money for that. We're giving you money if you bring back Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And, I guess it's timing too, and it's, you know, like the public. You know, like their whole reaction to, oh, what do you mean this movie's not about Michael Myers? You know what I mean? It's kind of like sometimes, like there are times I think where the general public just decides, we're just going to be contrary because.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And if you catch that like negative, that downslope, that wave, that kind of like, you know, oh, Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez are dating, we hate every movie they're in. You know, it's like that kind of random, you know, you know, it's popular to hate something, so then we're all gonna hate it kind of thing.
Yeah,
right.
You
right.
know, that'll hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whether and season also, is a decent movie or not, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's why they end up in cult status.
Right. Well, yeah. So that's why it's called consumerism.
Mm-hmm. True. True story.
They live.
They live. Ooh. Oh, yeah. That would have been a good Halloween story, too. Mm-hmm. Almost like a John Carpenter's Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, just a quick rewrite. I came here to eat Halloween candy and kick ass. And I'm all out of Halloween candy. Yeah, exactly.
I'm the Carpenter of Horror. Yeah. John Carpenter.
Exactly.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
John Carpenter presents Halloween. Werewolf of Watts.
Oh, dude.
With starring Snoop Dogg. Vivica Fox.
That's right. And Rodney Allen Rippey. Nah,
oh, shit. Yeah.
Right. And Quentin Tarantino, because you know you got to be part of that shit.
You know, it's funny because it's like, I guess he sold the franchise or whatever, or the Michael Myers, because then, you know, after three, we got that miasma of confusion. Halloween 4, Halloween
Return,
5,
Revenge, Curse.
H2O. Halloween but, H2O, Halloween you know ZNC. What?
Here's my thing. I love H2O for several reasons.
Okay.
One being the fact, and this is just purely from nostalgia and just fandom reason, was the fact that although this isn't the first time they were in a movie, a Carpenter film together, but having Janet Leigh and Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, and then just sort of that, what I thought was one of the most beautiful, like, kind of nods is Janet Leigh leaving the office and stepping into the car she drove in Psycho, and hearing the Psycho music kind of playing in the background as she's driving away, which I thought was pretty cool.
Mark, weren't there already in a movie together in the 70s?
They were the in the fog.
The fog. Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't the first. Like that's why I said it wasn't the first time they were in the fog together. Although they don't end up in the same scenes together until the very end.
They don't interact.
But then I thought it was just what I did find odd was the fact that 4, 5, and 6 suddenly didn't exist anymore.
Yeah, you all mentioned that. And
all of a sudden, she has a son.
Yeah.
We never mentioned the daughter. It's like sort of like this. It never happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and Michael, who has probably the greatest internal GPS system I've ever seen in my life, can simply find his sister
Anywhere.
Anywhere. Yeah. Mm.
Luke Skywalker needed that GPS.
Yeah. Shit.
Somebody in that Skywalker family. I mean, Jesus Christ. Like,
the whole family. Fuck that. The whole family.
Yeah. He doesn't even need her to like accidentally tweet.
Mm.
he knew where she was. And then sort of what was that? H2O, and then there was another one. Wasn't that the Curse of Michael Myers? Came after H2O? Because then that's when she ends up in the asylum and
mm-hmm. is
picked off within the first 30 seconds of the that film.
Right. Right, right, right. So it's after five, we get into H2O, and then we get into Resurrection. And we get a visit from Busta Rhymes of all.
Oh yeah, people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, had a couple of hip hop legends.
LL Cool J was in.
LL Cool J.
H2O. Was he in? Okay.
He was in H2O. Mm-hmm. And a matter of fact, didn't he survive?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Busta didn't though.
Well.
Oh my God! Yes. Oh my God.
He's the better rapper.
Wow.
Yeah, I did this. Yeah. Look, he can't find
that
verse.
I mean, that's one of those things that's a dig, but then LL would also probably be like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Look, seeing a Busta Rhymes can't find a versus. And LL ain't jumping up to take the point. So, you know, I'm just saying.
Well, actually, you know, there was a meme floating around. Not to do a complete hard left in topic, but meme floating around. Y'all can't find a Busta Rhymes opponent for a versus because y'all are looking at the wrong gender. And it was a split Missy screen Elliott. Of, mm-hmm. yes, Busta and Missy Elliott, which I'm sorry, that would be bananas. Like, I might actually go to that one.
Yeah,
and
I'm not
even trying to get caught at any hip hop thing. In anything mm-hmm. less than Kevlar underwear and like, you know, like the man in the iron mask, face shield, and just all kinds of bulletproof, bounce proof. Cause I, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Budweiser Superfest, and I have been witness to people being thrown off the second level in Madison Square Garden. So yeah, I love my hip hop, but I ain't unless I'm working, I don't necessarily need to be there. You know, that's just me. Like if it's De La Soul or somebody like that, I could see myself going to that.
Or unless it's like hip hop in Botswana, then you're pretty much safe.
Right. Sure. I'd have to wear my passport around my neck, I guess. But
No, you're pretty good. This one is pretty chill.
All right. Say so.
Trust me, look it up. That's why nobody knows anything about Botswana, because it's the quietest country in Africa. For a reason.
Oh boy.
Yeah. For a good reason, actually. So you know.
Okay, well, it's a good reason.
It's a good reason.
All right.
Yeah, their shit is stable. Their shit is stable. Yeah.
I think I vaguely remember hearing that somewhere. 60 minutes, who knows? But anyway, I don't know. Well, it's been 11 movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say my favorite moment is still the whole when Dr. Loomis lights him up in that first movie. And then he goes off the balcony.
Yeah.
And then he's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, that in and of itself, you know, it changed the face of horror, I want to say.
Yeah. It did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it because mm-hmm. perfect use of his music and the whole thing. I mean, it's just amazing, you know, how that one moment.
I remember. You know? I remember that moment when I was a kid because I had seen Halloween when it came on TV
mm-hmm.
and my parents let me watch it. Mm-hmm. That was the odd thing.
Right.
And I just remember him going off the edge of that. And we were not in the same room watching the movie. My parents were in one room watching, I was in another.
Nice.
And the end comes and I go to my father. I'm like, where did he go? And he just kind of shrugged and was like, I'm like, but he shot him. Where did he go? You know, it's almost like that scene in The Princess Bride. Who killed Humperdinck? Nobody killed Humperdinck. He got away?
It's like, right.
And what's great about that scene is that they show clips of where he had already been. And you hear him breathing. You hear that deep breathing. And then it just goes black after they fall on the Myers house. And I was like, wow, this was, you know, I mean, I give part two credit for picking up on the same night rather than jumping 5 years later. Right, then all of a sudden, you know, he's running all over the place.
I thought that was an inspired idea. That was an inspired idea to, you know, it's still Halloween night.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue with part two. Still that same fucking night. I thought that was inspiring.
Yeah. And he only killed people who were in his way.
Yeah.
He never went out of the way to kill. Like, I remember two very stark. The little boy who's getting teased in Halloween when he runs into him on the street and he just grabs him. And then he just, you know, the kid just keeps on walking. And then in part two, the guy with the radio walking down the street bumps into him and he just kind of looks up at him and he's like, you know, and he didn't kill the woman in the kitchen. The one he walked in and took her knife and walked out.
Right. In the movie, the first movie.
And Halloween 2.
In Halloween 2, I'm sorry, yes. Yeah, which is a big, you see that, well, yeah, and you see the difference with that in Halloween Kills.
Yeah, Halloween Kills.
Because they were like, yeah, I mean, sorry to segue, but.
No,
you're right.
Because the thing is, because, you know, what really threw me off was realizing that they're totally disregarding Halloween 2. Yeah, it's Halloween from the first movie. Jumped all the way, did nothing, none of that other stuff happened. That was a parallel universe that all that other stuff happened in. And they don't go to this. And it was like, huh. And just the brutalness of the couple that he killed. And the there's another woman he killed in there with the baby. I mean, yeah, like, and just to piggyback what you're saying, Mark, you know, this seems so almost out of character for Michael, especially when you're going for, especially when you're disregarding his bloodlust from 2 and 4 and 5, right? If you're totally disregarding those, then it's the Michael that we knew from the first movie.
Yeah.
And he was, as you were saying, he was focused, but he wasn't bloodthirsty.
He wasn't a butcher.
He wasn't a butcher. Yeah. He'd take the knife and then the same quiet way he came in the house, he'd leave the house without harming the mother or the daughter. Right. He was in the bathroom of that couple. They would have screamed and went crazy and then he would have snuck out through the back again.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, he probably would have done what he did to them firefighters, though. What he did to them firefighters was almost action level murder.
Well, it was interesting because I'm sorry, Mark. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Steve.
No, I was going to say that what's interesting about the firefighter thing is that when he emerges, you know, spoiler alert, when he emerges from this burning house, great visual, by the way, and he confronts the firefighters, of course, do what I want to say, because it's easy to sit there in the movie theater or wherever and scream, "What are y'all doing? Run!" and all this other. But you got to remember, these people don't realize this is an invincible automaton, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Right.
This is, you know, on the surface, this is just a dude in a mask, you know. And
who came out of a burning building?
And walked out of a burning building and apparently hurt their friends, because they did hit.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. No. So yeah.
My thing is, the three of us are standing in front of a house. Mm-hmm. And some mutual friend of ours is cut down in front of us. And then here comes the killer walking out of a burning house, you know, doing the whole Angela Bassett in Waiting to Exhale kind of thing. Yeah.
He's going to say, I thought he was going to say Letty. I think he's gonna say Letty from Lovecraft Country.
Right. That too. Right, exactly. You're coming out the house doing the bad sister thing after, you know, it's like the three of us are gonna be like, oh no, motherfucker. That's not how this is ending. And especially if we got axes and you know, one of us has a buzzsaw and all this stuff, like, we gonna try to kill this guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And think
you think that maybe it's best right now we go get vaccinated.
Right.
Oh, damn, he looked big. Hey, Mark, you want to go get vaccinated?
I was thinking the same thing.
And you're like, you know why they died inside that burning room? Because they weren't vaccinated. That's a COVID curse.
Right. Speaking of undead killers, right?
Jeez. Yeah. Michael is, but Michael, you know, that's the thing. I never perceived Michael. I guess, you know, we want to lump him into the same category as Freddy and Jason and everything. Mm. And you know, this ideology that he can't die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've just never understood. I guess I've never understood where the basis of that came from. Like, I know, you know, Loomis running around screaming, you know, we used to always say that Loomis will complain to anybody who'll stop and listen to him for 5 minutes. You know, we just got, you know, he's the embodiment.
It's pure evil. It has to be destroyed.
Although you don't seem to have an answer to that question of, like, exactly how do we stop the unstoppable killing machine, you know.
He thought he did.
Right. He thought Roscoe was the answer, but when it wasn't.
Hey, well, yeah, wait, real quick. I'm sorry, guys. What did you guys think of them changing that part of the story also with Loomis about to shoot Jason? Jason did not disappear from the lawn. Spoilers. I'm sorry, spoilers.
First of all, Michael. It freaked me out to see Donald Pleasance in the first place.
Okay,
it's like, it's 2021. Yeah. Like, oh my God. But I will say, nice fucking CGI. Because that actually, to me, that was actually better than Carrie Fisher's last appearance in the Star Wars franchise. It just looked it's one of those things, if you don't know this dude is dead, you're not even thinking about it. Right. Oh, Donald, you actually might even sit there and be like, oh, Donald Pleasant's still kicking around. All right. It's like, no, fucking he's not. You know.
Mm-hmm.
but you know, I think the thing that really stuck out to me, now that they are reimagining things, and we've taken the Rob Zombie movies and, you know, kind of tossed them in the trash. I want to say that the thing that they seem to kind of be steering towards now is that the deaths are making him stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was something that was kind of hinted at. And, you know, I guess that's the rub. And I don't want to necessarily say it's a cop-out, because it actually, to be honest, it actually makes sense. It's like, well, why is this thing still living? Why is this thing still, no matter what you hit it with, you know, everything from like a bazooka to raid, you know, like nothing seems to phase this thing.
Right.
You know, it's like, does that, you know, does that make sense? And to be truthful, I feel like Freddy was the first one to kind of jump into that kind of, you know, I'm stronger because I'm collecting souls, you know, that sort of thing. I mean,
like the Clive Barker weirdness.
But that made the Krueger thing made sense, because he was a dream demon. He was no longer alive.
Mm-hmm.
I could subscribe to that. But this, you know, it's just like the same thing with Jason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how many times they did this man dirty. You know, they blew him up. He's still alive. I'm like, okay, you know what? This is just, this is becoming, and there's no supernatural connection to it. It's just, you know, I mean, except for the fact that they tried to explain that in the curse and resurrection and return of Michael Myers section, where it was some kind of Celtic organization that was keeping him alive and stuff like that.
Druids.
The druids,
The druids, and
I was like, all right.
Yeah,
now we're crossing into that territory.
At least he can go out to outer space.
or as my brother said, he dropped his slave name.
Oh shit.
To this day, that's still thing. He's like, I want to see why Jason became a Muslim. I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, Jason X.
We didn't land on Crystal Lake. Crystal Lake landed on us.
That's great.
I'm like, all right. I can't anymore. He's just like,
oh
boy, he's is not my
that
name.
That would be that's interesting, nothing. Though. See, Jason kind of like just pass over a bunch of brothers with like Final Call and bean pies. Be like,
right.
And then just keep walking.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. I ain't gonna front.
I had to drop that name. That name was bad for me. That Christian name they gave me, Voorhees. What's a Voorhees anyway? Voor as in voyeur, he's as in him. See him. See what I'm saying? You get where I'm going. All right, shut up, man. Just
you're doing too much. Right.
but we do need to address the Rob Zombie thing.
I'm trying to forget it personally.
I know you are. I know.
Yeah. First of all, bad use of Danny Trejo. Mm. And anytime you abuse the fact that you managed to somehow book Danny Trejo, I have issue with that. It's like that alone. That alone, you get dragged to the dungeon for that. And I mean, I don't know. It those movies to me felt like, you know, an attempt to be like, I want to say overly artistic.
Mm. Okay.
You know, and of course, you know, by casting his wife as
Mama Voorhees.
Exactly. Well, Mama
Myers.
I'm sorry, Mama Myers.
You know, I just, you know, it's like then it starts to become like whenever Tim Burton has Helen Bonham Carter in one of his flicks, it's like, you know, it's like it's not like I don't read trade magazines and I don't know this is your wife.
Right.
You know, and she's getting all this shine. When what I want to see is Michael Myers stabbing people up.
Right.
You know, it's, I don't know. It
I
just
mean, my
definitely
thing,
was not my thing.
I thought the first Halloween, up until the point of Michael going into the asylum, was a decent film. I thought it was a good look at what happens psychologically when someone reverts to that dark side of themselves.
Right.
I don't think I did. Jason X as sort of like a mirror. That movie would have been a great space horror film without Jason. Could have been anybody else murdering those people on that ship, because the quality of that film, everything felt like they were really, really trying to do something good. And then you gave us this guy, you know.
Not necessarily Event Horizon, but definitely.
No.
But it was like you gave us a Michael Myers movie and then you tried to. I guess you tried to explain why Michael was the way he was.
Mm-hmm.
I think Yeah. I think if you had done any other, come up with your own serial killer or then whatever, that would have worked perfectly. But this was, you know, even Malcolm McDowell's turn at Dr. Loomis, you know, it just...
That was inspired.
You it have was. To it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But to Stephen's point, it was very artistic. Mm. It was an artistic type of... it. You know what
that was? It's a film. It tried to be a film than a movie.
It tried to do what Hereditary accomplished. Mm. Mm.
Wow, and, good one. Good one. Yeah.
But you used Michael Myers.
Good one.
Yeah. And then when you realize what you had done, much like Lizzie Borden in that poem, you turn around, you make a sequel, and then you just go, you know, I'm gonna just let him loose. And then it was like, why? Because at this point, you know, I think, and that's the thing. It's like, whenever we try to reboot the things that we grew, and I guess I wonder if our parents or older people, that's how they felt when Dracula came out. Mm. You know, when Francis Ford Coppola announced, "I'm doing Dracula," there had to have been some people who grew up watching either the Hammer films or the original films and going, "Oh, not again.
Yeah.
We're gonna reboot this thing yet again."
Well, see, here's the rub with all of that.
Okay.
I honestly, like, I will be resistant to a remake if the original was damn good. Okay. But there's a difference between redoing Dracula from 1931 into the Hammer iterations and the Bram Stoker, even Louis Jordan, even that version that we were all discussing.
It's all about the interpretation, you're saying.
Weeks ago. No, it's about the fact that the movies are improved.
Okay, yeah.
To me, movies are better. You do a remake, and all it is a cash grab. And all it is because you know that we now live in a world where parents and children don't talk so much. Mm. So you make almost a shot for shot remake of something that was coming out, something that came out, let's say, in the glory days of the 70s. Mm. And the only difference is you have like, maybe you have a little more diversity, but now no one's unattractive and no one acts as well as the people in the previous movie. That's when you lose me. I don't mind Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. I mean,
I'm not referring to you. I'm saying, so when we hear, like now, I grew up watching Friday the 13th.
Right.
But when somebody goes, "Well, we're doing a reboot of Friday the 13th," I'm saying my reaction to that, I wonder if my reaction to that is the same, like, let's say what my father had when they said they were doing a remake when Dracula 1979 came out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because
he saw the Hammer films. So, you know, he probably was like, oh. You know, I wonder if that's the same thing that goes on. And no, because your point is extremely valid. If it's a better film, if you're improving it and you're making it a better film, then by all means, go at it. Cash grabs are just exactly that, and you can see through them. Mm-hmm. I just was wondering if the response to the announcement of them redoing another remake of something people had already seen, if that's the same way they felt until they saw it and was like, oh, well, this was 700 times better than what, you know, I'm happy with this.
And to your point, I will say that there's always going to be some skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not full on, get the fuck out of here, man, and throw the table over and everything. And maybe nothing that strong. But
who do you know like that?
I don't know. But
what do you hang out with?
I work in television. There's a lot of rage in television.
They remaking Halloween again.
Damn, son.
Come on, oatmeal again. Oh.
Yeah, son, it's a remake. Not,
yeah, right.
And not your taxes. It's like, you get upset.
I'm sorry.
Ain't nobody slapped your mama, right? No.
Oh, ham and eggs.
No, but I see your point, Steve.
But yeah, you know, all I'm saying is it gets bothersome when the remake is pointless.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But change in anything that doesn't kind of, you know, like the general public doesn't always handle what they're generally not expecting well. Like, and I was just talking to somebody, and this is just a random conversation I was having earlier today, when I was talking to somebody about how everybody outside of Black men really got in their feelings when Denzel played a villain for the first time in Training Day. You know, we're all looking at each other like, yeah, well, shit, I know about at least five dudes that act like that. You know, no big, but everybody else.
Yeah.
Black women, white people, everybody else. Oh my God, Denzel, he's a villain in all that business. And Jay-Z even said that, well, that's actually the Denzel I know, you know, in an interview, because he was, you know, he was asked about it or whatever. You know, it's like, I just feel like, okay, another good example of the general skepticism, but then it went the other way. Tom Cruise's Lestat. Remember how?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the initial outrage that everybody felt when it was announced that Tom Cruise was playing Lestat, when Risky Business was going to be everybody's, you know, favorite bisexual vampire dude? Like, like people were like bent out of shape. And then he's actually pretty fucking terrifying. And everybody chilled the fuck out. You know? So yeah, to that point, it's like, there's always the skepticism, and the skepticism is born from people being shaken out of their expectations.
Right.
And then what ends up happening, you know, it's like, then the movie has to show and prove.
Yeah.
And speaking of, you know, I guess, diversity, so to speak, or things that people aren't expecting. So now there's this whole thing that, like, and at first I thought it was a gag, but I guess people are actually taking this seriously. The thing where there's a few articles, and even Charlamagne Tha God has had to weigh in, and all this business about Michael is supposedly like, because he kills a gay couple in, you know, in this movie, and people are apparently upset, like really upset, like Black men and Black folks in general, and women, and you know, with some glaring exceptions, of course, with Sigourney Weaver and so on. Like, we haven't been catching wreck from serial killers and from Hannibal Lecter to Godzilla and everybody else. It's like everybody else getting killed, and all of a sudden this happens, and then there's like, and I don't know if that's like a backlash from the Dave Chappelle thing. I don't know what's going on.
Wait, people upset about that?
Apparently. To the point where Charlamagne Tha God had to like weigh in on it. You know, it's just something that just happened to catch my attention. And I don't even know how seriously people are taking this, but it's just like, oh shit, really?
Right.
Like, and here it is. The three of us have basically, you know, made the move where, you know, we're sick of Black dudes getting killed. You know, and not just getting killed, of course, it's also just the character development.
Right. Yeah, well, we have a history of that shit.
Yeah. So, like, we're actually considered a trope. You know, yes. It's like it's you know, it became one of those things, like, because they would even say it in the movies. Like, I remember when LL in Deep Blue Sea, when he was like, man, brothers don't ever make it out of these situations, you know, and I remember people just laughing about that, because it's like, that's an uncomfortable truth. Every time we were in a horror film, which interestingly enough, now that you mention that, was it on Shudder? I was watching Night of the Demons, the 80s film, and in the description of the film, it makes note that this was one of the earlier horror films where a Black person survived.
Yes.
I was like,
oh, okay.
Really? And I was like, because I always remember what's his name runs around all the time touting that the dude who played Kincaid in Dream Warriors.
Okay.
How he's like, you know, I'm the first brother to ever survive. And I was like, all right, well, there's a couple of other films that are claiming that mantle. I don't know if that's something we need to be running around holding that trophy up about.
He is actually beaten by a couple of people.
True.
I am going to fuck up this man's name, but it's the protagonist from Blackula.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Rashomon Thalmas. I know you're talking about Thalmas.
Rasala. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, Rasala. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rasala, yeah.
I know what you mean. I'm looking it up now.
He survived.
Yes, he did.
So did the brother from Dawn of the Dead.
Well, right.
Ken Voorhees.
Yes. Ken Forey.
Forey. Ken Forey's, yeah.
I got one more.
Mm-hmm.
Rosie Greer.
The same beast with two heads.
Yes. Rosie fucking Greer. And I think he may actually predate Thomas.
Wow.
I think he might actually predate Thomas. And I had to think about that like real hard. And because I was a child when these movies came out and I had no business watching them anyway. And there's all of that going on. And you know, I was like, wait, which one of those came out? And I think Beast with Two Heads might actually predate Blackula.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That's a little fun fact trivia stuff for you. Mark, we only got like 2 minutes left. Sell something.
Hell at Brooklyn Tea, still out. Get your copies for that. I keep an eye out for Speculative Fiction Academy. SpeculativeFictionAcademy.com. It is a new online academy course designed by Lisa Macon Wood. I am one of the teachers of a course called Terror on the Screen, which explains how to write screenplays for horror movies. Mm-hmm. So SpeculativeFictionAcademy.com, check it out. See what they have to offer. It's a great group of faculty people attached to that. So that's the big thing right now.
And just tagging on to that, because Ms. Wood and I actually had a conversation not too long ago. And while I'm not being a professor or anything as cool as what Mark is doing, I am going to be writing, I'm going to be providing some vignettes that will be entitled Whining About Movies. Oops. Whining About Movies.
Nice.
With SVP. And that is going to be seen sooner than later. Kirk, any last words before we sign out?
I do not. You know what? Hell at the Way Station. Hell at the Way Station. Hell at Brooklyn Tea. Pick up your own copies. Check it out. You'll love it.
All right.
You get ham on that shit.
And with those wise words.
And don't forget, when this is over, since now that Halloween is over, Kirk, I got to get you my Christmas list for my kid, so I got to know what you deliver them for Christmas Day. Thanks.
Wizards do not celebrate Christmas.
But they do celebrate Samhain, kids. For tuning in, checking us out. We'll be back next week. Who knows? Maybe we'll drag Ray or Denise or somebody back in. But anyway, we're out of here. Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween.
You do have kind of like a Father Christmas thing happening.